AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Outside markets offered support to the ag commodities, but the ag commodities really didn't want to respond. Crude oil futures were higher to end the week, but bean oil futures were an anchor on the market. Sellers also had control of the livestock markets to finish the week.
Live from a day closer to real spring weather via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon's guest analyst is Chris Robinson of Robinson Ag Marketing. I'm producer Beck Apple, Joe Stackler. And now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Big Apple Joe Stackler. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. Yeah, Davis has got today off. He's going to take a couple of days off to start next week as well. So be safe out there, Davis. Have fun and enjoy the time off. 60 degrees and windy here. The sun's shining, Big Apple. Mm-hmm. But, like you said, we're another day closer to spring.
Mm-hmm. This is actually the great time of the year because you know it's right around the corner, and we've got the whole summer ahead of us, yeah. And even a couple really nice weeks in autumn.
Yeah.
That's all ahead of us, all right in front of us.
It's all right in front of us. Listen to you. What an optimistic son of a gun you are today.
Yeah, well, weather has this knack for being predictable in a way. Yeah.
Well, get this. Today we're at 60 degrees in northeast Iowa and heading to a high of 62. So we're almost there. Tomorrow, 76. Sunday, 77. Monday, 78. I mean, we're going to get to 80 degrees in one of these days here.
Yeah.
Coming up in the next three is what it looks like to me. And if we could get rid of some of the wind, I think everybody would be pretty happy. But people are getting out and getting things done in northeast Iowa, and I'm going to go for a ride this afternoon, go out and take a look at them.
Good deal. Sounds great.
All right.
Bring the weekend. But first, we got to do the show.
Yeah. Let's hurry up and get that done so that we can go for a drive. Love it. Chris Robinson is going to be joining us in the next segment. Robinson Ag Marketing. We've got a long list of things that we want to talk about. But you know what? When we get Chris on here, it all comes down to what are you doing to take care of your job? What are you doing to take care of your marketing? What are you doing to make sure that you're positioned the way that you need to be positioned with your cash grain and with your risk management plan? So I'm sure that we will be talking about some risk management with Chris coming up here in just a little bit. We'll take a look at some of the bigger fundamentals in the market as well and what is driving price action out there right now. All right. With that, like I said, Davis has got the day off, so I'll go ahead and get to the markets. May soft red winter wheat futures made the high for the week shortly after the open on Monday's session, with prices grinding lower for most of the rest of the week. Positioning for Thursday's supply and demand report had an influence on all the grain markets earlier this week, but those reports failed to generate any momentum for any market in either direction. Wheat prices continue to look to Russia for direction, but mixed signals dominated the wheat market this week. The risk of a hotter and drier weather trend for the U.S. Southern Plains helped hard red winter wheat futures close slightly higher on the week. July HRW futures today were 8.5 cents higher at 587. July SRW wheat futures up 4.5 cents to 570.75. July spring wheat today closed at 650, up 4.75 cents on the week. Now, excuse me, on the day. On the week, July SRW wheat futures down 11 cents, July HRW up 7.5 cents, and July spring wheat down 6.5 cents. So mixed trade in the wheat complex. Like I said, there were some mixed signals and some head-scratching information coming out of Russia, Ukraine, and Total Supplies there, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. Most of the talk this week on Ukrainian trade was corn into China, which we'll get to here in just a little bit. USDA increased total corn demand 50 million bushels in yesterday's supply and demand report, and that was not enough to encourage speculative trading funds to exit short positions. The result was Thursday's downside reversal in corn futures. Follow-through selling forced a slightly lower opening corn this morning, with prices spiking support at yesterday's low before the short covering helped to push corn prices higher on the day. Corn planting got started in the Midwest this week, although progress in the eastern Corn Belt is expected to be slow due to some wet early spring soil conditions. Capping buying in corn futures this week, Chinese buying interest in Ukrainian corn, and some timely rains for Brazil's Safrinha corn crop. Supporting prices were reports of late season disease damage to the Argentine corn crop. If you did not hear the conversation with Dr. Michael Cordonnier yesterday morning, Thursday morning on AgriTalk, go back and listen to that. This disease that they're dealing with, it's jumping from field to field because it's being carried by insects. It's a bacterial disease, and it's taking a bite out of yields in Argentina there to wrap things up this year. On the week, July corn up a half a cent. December corn on the week down 0.5 cents. USDA this morning announced the sale of 124,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations in the current marketing year. That was the third bean sale announced this week, with the tally split between old and new crop delivery. USDA this week also cut 20 million bushels from expected old crop soybean exports, dropping the estimate to 1.7 billion bushels. China has slowed its buying from year-ago levels, creating a negative narrative around global soybean demand. May bean futures were lower on the week, but prices are back at the midpoint of the sideways trading range that's been in place for the past 6 weeks. May soybeans today, 14¾ cents higher, 11.74. July beans up 14¼ cents to 11.86¾. November beans closed at 11.76¼, up 12 cents today. July beans on the week down a dime. November beans down 8.5 cents. July bean oil down 294 points. And get this, July soybean meal up $7.90. Cotton futures posted four consecutive losses to finish the week, with July cotton trading to the lowest level since January 19. July cotton today, 66 points lower at 84.59 on the week. July cotton down 323 points. Box beef prices were higher this morning, with heavyweight choice graded boxes climbing back on top of $300. June live cattle, $2.425 lower today at 171.47.5. October futures down 280 to 171.77.5. And May feeders, 395 lower at 234.20. Wednesday's downside key reversal in May lean hog futures was ignored yesterday, but it brought sellers back to the hog market today. Hogs ending near the low of the week. May hogs, 342.5 lower, 93.87.5. June hogs down 372.5 to 102.07.5. Now, on the week, June live cattle down just 57.5 cents. May feeder cattle down $3.97.5, most of that coming today. June lean hogs, again, most of it coming today. June lean hogs on the week down $4.92.5. Okay, clear the way. We've got Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing, on the way here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. Today's guest, Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing, joins us right now. Chris, how are you, man? It's good to talk with you.
Chip, good to be here. All right. Kind of an interesting head into the weekend, I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. Coming off the USDA reports that we got yesterday, what did you make of it? Because yesterday we had some chart signals resulting from the way that the markets traded. Today, it kind of reversed everything around again, didn't they?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, we had the acres report and it looked a little bullish, and then you know, 3 days later, and once the market thinks about it, and we'll get a repricing. This may be what we're looking at here as we head into this weekend. We might have had a little different story if it hadn't been for the headline, the concern that, you know, something really bad may happen in the Mideast, which would make oil prices spike higher. Ironically, I know that's kind of creepy, but the fear about crude oil going higher probably helps soybeans turn around today. And I saw a little short covering there. Why is that? Well, because the natural knee-jerk reaction of people, if they're looking for something, if they think that crude oil is going to go up, then all commodities are going to go up. And then also you have people talk about, well, it's going to be biodiesel and it's going to be more ethanol. That's all it took to give us a little bit of a bump, which was, I think, you know, we'll see what happens here in the next week. Generally, with these USDA reports, it takes a couple days to shake it out.
Right. Right. Let's make sure that everybody knows what you're talking about. There's lots of talk, lots of speculation out there today that Iran is going to insert itself into the Israeli war and take a much more active role in that war, if that's even possible, than what they have to this point. And Chris, like you said, good grief, if all of the sudden the Iranian regime becomes an active participant in this, it changes the whole dynamics of what's happening in the Middle East, right?
Yes. 30% of the world's oil. Now, the U.S. is producing more oil than anybody. Thank goodness. I can't imagine where crude oil prices would be if we weren't doing that. But that makes people nervous. When people get nervous, they get long, they buy a bunch of calls, and they think, well, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens? So that's kind of what drove us here today. The concern is that, you know, if Iran gets involved, there's certainly not going to be more oil coming out of the Straits of Hormuz, right? So it's probably going to slow down. That is the concern. And the market repriced it. I mean, and we're sitting here now, crude oil, West Texas, you know, is at 85. The October high when this whole mess started was 95. So that's the key level to go. I know, and I think that people are we're kind of waiting to see what happens. But I think that's what drove us today. That's the underlying story.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that plays out next week.
Yep. I'm not even sure how to ask this question, but I'll just throw it out. How big of a risk do you think this is, Chris? Because last weekend when we went home, I said on the air, listen, I don't feel good about going home. This, you know, the market's being closed over the weekend because it feels like this is the weekend that Iran's going to get involved. Obviously, it didn't happen last weekend. Is it just a matter of time?
I believe so. And certainly, you know, unfortunately, my job, I missed the days when I was on the floor and I never listened to the TV at all when I was working. But,
yeah,
you know, for the last 10, 12, 13 years, I've been sitting at the screen all day and I have the TV going on. And just about every 20 minutes, was, you know, this may happen. So they're certainly prepping us for something. Hopefully it doesn't happen. Hopefully cooler heads prevail. But it sure feels like there's something brewing. And so we'll just have to – we'll know by Sunday night. I'm going to say this. Sunday night is shaping up. That could be pretty interesting, you know, for everybody.
Yep. No doubt. Okay. Hey, let's go back to yesterday's supply and demand reports from USDA. If there's an overriding takeaway from the reports, what was it?
Well, it certainly wasn't bullish. All right. That's really what it comes down to. You can say it was confusing or, you know, and the carryouts are really what moved us. And, you know, yes, it was a little bit lower than what they thought for corn. But, you know, 2 billion bushels is still what we're dealing with. Changing by 25 million bushels, you know, it was kind of a courtesy reduction as far as I could tell. And everything else was on the high end and higher than they thought. So we were looking for some sort of bullish news where we could turn the corner and come off, you know, current levels. We didn't get it. This to me is looking more and more like 2012, where we had to wait till mid-May, late May, to see if we can turn the corner. So it just feels to me like that USDA kicks the can. The market's well supplied. You know, it's the reason we're at 435 corn and not 535 corn is because we just are sitting on too much corn. The whole world knows it. And again, we were hoping for a surprise. And, you know, we thought they might change the production numbers coming out of South America. That continues to be a sore point for people thinking that, you know, one side's right, one side's wrong. You know, if they ever do address that situation and it is bullish, I'm sure the market's primed for a recovery. What do I mean by that? Well, everybody's short.
Yeah.
Right? The funds are short 1.3 billion bushels of corn. They're short 700 million bushels of soybeans. So it won't take much to get these guys to cover. Again, it's just kind of we have to play the waiting game. So I'd say be patient. Don't get overly bearish. You know, the move we had lower from October to March, it frustrated everybody. You know, corn dropped 80 cents, new crop beans dropped $2. So we're still in recovery mode from that. So I'm a firm believer that at some point during the marketing year, we will get a chance to have a rally. Just want to make sure they're ready to do something this time, because it may be short-lived like it was last summer when we popped up in June and then it was gone. So if anything taught you last year, it's if we get a rally, boy, don't hesitate. Don't hem and haw. Get something done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. We're going to come back and talk about that more when we get into some of the risk management ideas. Chris, is there any one reason, and I'm sure it's probably not one reason, I'm sure it's multiple reasons, why the funds are as comfortable on the short side of the corn market on April 12th as they are this year? I don't recall a time that it's been so hard to get them out of short positions.
Yeah, you probably have to go back to like 2010 when they were all short going into that that spring planning. I remember that, Goldman Sachs. You know, everybody was short. So they're not infallible. I mean, right now they're long 80,000 contracts of cotton. You just got completely crushed on those. So, and 3 months ago, they were long a ton of soybean meal. They lost horrendously on that. So they're not infallible by any means.
Oh, no.
The thing is, they don't day trade. So they're moved by the 100-day, 200-day moving average. And right now, we're kind of slaves to the charts, which I hate to say, but we're under the 100-day, we're under the 50-day. Until we can get above that, that gets these guys' attention. And so, again, it's a waiting game. It's a big game of chicken. I can't remember the last time was we didn't get some weather issue, which will give us a shot. The question is, you know, how long-lived will it be? But their job's to make money. They don't really care. They love, as long as they're trading with the trend. And let's face it, we've been trending lower since, you know, for a while now, and that's why they're short. You give them a reason to be long, they would love to be long. Just like right now, they're long the entire protein complex. They're long a ton of cattle, along a ton of lean hogs. So again, I consider them, they're a force of nature. I don't think it's Dr. Evil sitting there. If they're motivated by anything, all these guys want to do is make money. That's what they get paid to do.
Yeah.
And so again, just give them a reason, they will cover.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, and you know, your reminder of that they're in it for the long haul, that they're not day traders, I think is very important. It does put your focus back on those longer term moving averages as trigger points for them to, for the funds to decide, you know, as decision makers to move some money around in the markets. But boy, with the amount of uncertainty, I would think they'd be quick to jump off of the short side of the market. But why jump off the short side when you're basically on the right side of the market? It's hard to force it.
Yeah. And I can tell you something. If these guys, you know, if they're short 260,000 contracts of corn, they've got calls against it. I mean, they're hedged. So, you know, they can flick the switch. Again, we just need the market to cooperate. And so I'd say be patient. It feels a lot like 2012 or 2020 to me.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back. 2012 or is it 2020? Are we talking weather-wise? Are we talking price patterns? What are we talking about? We are talking with Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing. Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and recap where the markets closed. July HRW wheat futures, 8.5 cents higher, 587. July SRW wheat up 4.5 cents to 570.75. May corn futures 6.75 cents higher, 435.5. December corn closed at 472, up 6 cents on the day. May beans 14.75 cents higher, 1174. November soybeans closed at 1176.25, up 12 cents on the day. July cotton up 66 points, down 66 points at 84.59. June live cattle futures 242.5 lower at 171.47.5. May feeders 395 lower at 234.20. June lean hogs down 372.5 to 102.07.5. Give Pro Farmer a try. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Chris, everything's fine. Everything's fine. You were talking about, you know, turning and looking at the TV every 20 minutes or so and seeing what the next message is. I did that in the last minute, turned around and looked, and I see that President Biden has sent a message to Iran. Very simple message. The message just being don't.
Yeah, well, I hope it gets through to, you know, and it works. How's that?
Yeah, so. I hope it does too. I don't know if it's going to, but I hope it does work. Okay. 2012, 2020, you mentioned both of those years. Are you talking about weather patterns? You're talking about price patterns?
Yes.
Marketing opportunities? What do you got going?
Weather and price. I mean, and I spend a lot of time looking at technicals, and this looks a lot like exactly what happened in 2012. We actually were sideways to lower in the May, and then it was off to the races. So kind of same similarities to here. You know, we before Thanksgiving, we were at 528 corn. We dropped to under 446. Yeah. So we've already had kind of like the first shot across the bow. You know, soybeans dropped from $13 to, 11.30, So it's like now we're looking, we're in recovery mode. And that makes it hard. It's no joke. Marketing's not easy. Trying to figure out where the market's going to go is not easy. And the last thing anybody wanted to do back right at Thanksgiving was to do any marketing, right? But that was that was our window. So hopefully now if we get a recovery like we did last year, and I'm not promising it. The guys always say, do you promise? I'm like, no, I don't promise anything. But if we do, you got to be ready to make some decisions. And this is probably going to be a year where you really want to look into, because nobody wants to make cash sales at three-year lows. Nobody does. And this is where you want to look at using, you can go out and buy 200 days of protection, or you can buy, 2 weeks of protection. The less time you pick to protect, it lets you have a floor but keep the upside open. So I think 2024 may be the year of the put option for farmers, kind of like the way 08, 09 was. If especially we get a weather issue and we blow up, because that's exactly what you want to do. You want to keep the upside open in case we get a run up. The last thing you want to be doing is making margin calls because you sold futures in the hole, or making margin calls because you wanted a 450 put and you sold a $5 call, and then all of a sudden corn's at $6 and you're like, you create a mess. So rule number one, don't create a mess. Rule number two, look at these shorter term options where you can have a defense, which is really what this is, like playing football. It's a defense against, prices just continuing to go lower. But boy, then it also lets you be in a position, if we do get that rally, then you can make some moves.
Right. The longer term weather outlook and the story of we are in El Nino, trending, it looks like we are now trending to ENSO neutral, could be to La Nina by the second half of the growing season. That weather outlook was talked about quite a bit this week. If that happens in the first half of the growing season is okay with no major threats, and we have to wait until the second half of the growing season, I don't know, after the way that the corn crop performed a year ago, Chris, I don't know how the market's going to react to that this year.
Right. And, it's funny. I've done probably, 2 dozen meetings this year, listened to some really smart agronomists. And that was a common theme that, this looks like the spring. We're going to have pretty wide open planting, no delayed planting issues. It's dry enough, so guys are going to get a lot of stuff done. So, and it's looking like that. And that's one thing I picked up from listening to the agronomists, was like, that's kind of what we had in 2012 and 2020. And then the real question was, did we get the rains in May? So we may be set up for that similarly. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not a weather person, but that's what I heard, and a lot of the computer models out there are saying it certainly looks like we're going to get the crop planted in rather on a timely fashion right now. It's not like it was 3-4 years ago in 18 when it just rained forever. So if we get the crop in, then it comes down to, are we going to get the rain? And the USDA, I'll say this. They haven't been very helpful, but at least they haven't been horrendously, really, really hurting us, come out with some crazy numbers. So I'd say they're, kind of a moot point. That's why I look so much about I try and every Friday, we look at what the managed money's doing, because it's going to come down to what the USDA is going to say. They've already spoken, right? Then it comes down to Mother Nature and the other force of nature, which is the money flow. Yeah. So if those things line up, hopefully we get a pop. But it sure feels like we're going to get the crop in early, and then we're going to have to sit back and watch the weather, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you look at the U.S. drought monitor and everything, Wisconsin, throw Wisconsin into the central corn belt. But Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, Minnesota. It all looks like let's get things going and get things going in a hurry. Might be a little bit wet in the Eastern Corn Belt, but Chris, the potential for a spring rally on a planting delay in the Eastern Corn Belt, that's really hard for me to anticipate something like that this year. Just the planting window is wider in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Right. And it's, you know, there's guys already been rolling, getting their beans in earlier.
Yep.
You know, the guys used to wait and get their beans in, but now they've got these studies where the earlier they plant them, they actually get better yields, which is kind of interesting. So I think it's something to watch. And again, I wish it was we don't have a demand story, right? China's asleep at the wheel for whatever reason. I mean, they step in once in a while, but they certainly aren't as aggressive as they were a couple years ago. I think they're waiting to see what happens. You know, with their economy, but also, you know, we're heading into this election, and they're going to face two different people depending on who wins the presidency. And that's something that may also just keep those guys on the sidelines too, because let's face it. I mean, we really need to maintain good relationships with them because they buy so many of our beans. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I know a lot of guys are very bearish. When I was down in Houston for Commodity Classic, that was kind of near the lows.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of depressed people down there. There's a lot of grain out there that's sitting in bins that's not protected, and it's hard to do anything after an 80-cent break, right? You're just like, well, I missed the move. I've told all my guys that are in that situation, keep a cheap put underneath there, and if we get nice rallies, you know, look to move into the rallies.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the keep everything kind of buttoned up tight and look for that. But, we're waiting for the next story. Hopefully, you know, we turn the corner here, and I would just like to get away from this USDA report and start looking, you know, for the weather, quite honestly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, and from the note that you sent earlier today, one of the first thing that I highlighted on the notes, was don't get overly bearish. I love that. You can't get more bearish as a market goes down. And if the market has gone down enough that it's starting to find demand, you shouldn't be getting more bearish. Does it feel like that's where we're at?
Well, it feels like we were there in March for sure. Maybe just because I stood in a room with 10,000 farmers and they were all, you know, angry and upset. Now we've had a little bit of recovery then. And I've got to remember, we had a nice, you know, 93-cent rally in soybeans. And it didn't have any legs. You know, as of today's action, this week's action, we've given back half of it. That's another thing. If you get these good rallies, you know, do something, because we've seen them. When they're there, they're there. And what takes 2 or 3 months to give us a good rally, we lose it in 2 or 3 days. That's the way these markets are. They correct so sharply. You just saw it. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about feeders and then live cattle, but or even the hogs. You know, we've had a tremendous rally. And then boom, when it goes, it's too late to do something. So as the market rallies, try and get something done. Okay. Nobody knows when these big corrections are going to come, but, I would say, you know, like I said, I don't know how to tell you, don't get too bearish down here in the lows. You know, keep your powder dry. That's what I can tell you.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Couple of minutes left. Take us over to the livestock trade. What do you like in the cattle after a kind of a rough end of the week?
Yeah, the problem is that's a good and bad. They were the funds were long, really, for the last 3 or 4 months. A tremendous amount of contracts: 50,000 fat cattle, 9,000 feeders, 77,000 hogs. I mean, now the cattle market has had a lot of volatility already. Obviously, the October to December debacle, but then we had a tremendous rally there, and had about a week and a half, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then boom, you know, we have this correction. I would anticipate more and more volatility like that. It's very sensitive to what's going on in the outside markets. I think one of the reasons we had such a sell-off here today was because the smart stock market, which has been on a tear in the stock market in 5 months, was up 25%. And then we go down 2 or 3% and people think it's the end of the world. It's really not, but it's scary to see the Dow down 500 points. I get it. But I think that's another reason you saw pressure in the cattle. That could snap back next week. But again, if you're looking for a situation where really in the last 3 years, it's been a textbook case of why you want to use puts to protect prices, because it lets you have a floor for days like this. But boy, if we turn around and start screaming higher again, like we might, you know, you don't want to put a cap on it. So that's what I'd look for there. I think protect.
Gotcha. And, you know, the best days to buy those puts in that cattle trade is when they're getting cheaper and the cattle are making the moves up closer to the all-time highs. So, all right, buddy. Good stuff. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. Have a nice weekend.
You bet. Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing. I'll be right back.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Oh, you can let Van Halen play. We're heading for the weekend. All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Thank you, Big Apple Joe, for everything that you do, keeping us on the air. That's it's a big job, and keeping us out of trouble, an even bigger job. Davis is gone today. He will be away from the studio for a couple of days early next week as well, taking a little bit of time off. But we'll see who else. I got a feeling Michelle will be in. Tyne might be back. Had a great free-for-all with Tyne Morgan and Jim Wiesmeyer this morning, talking about the HPAI in dairy cattle and what exactly do we call it. And we need consensus and agreement on what it is going to be called. If you're going to be changing labels, change the label and let's move forward. But let's not add to confusion by keeping two different labels on the same thing out there either. So go back and give that a listen. I thought it was really good. Chris Robinson, don't get more bearish as prices fall. Conversely, do not get more bullish as prices rise. I've seen it a million times as a reporter in the commodity world, where you look at the commodity houses, they have their price projections out there, they have their price targets, and as soon as a market gets close to that price target, instead of sticking with it and having the conviction to stick with it, well, you got to move it. You got to move that target now because, well, it's close to it. So what's next? No, you don't have to move it. What if you're right? Now we see it all the time with the stock pickers, right? Whether they come out and say Apple's going to X or whatever it might be the case with the stock pickers and putting a price on a stock and trying to figure out exactly where it's going to go to. As soon as you get close, the goalposts move again. Dealing with it all of the time. So it was interesting. That whole thought process triggered in my mind as Chris was talking about the influence of the equities trade on livestock futures in particular. And here we are. We've got the Dow down more than 500 points again today. It's below 38,000, the Dow index is now. S&P 500, 5119. So that's under some pressure as well. The NASDAQ is 275 points lower, 16, 166 on the NASDAQ. So it's a heavy pressure day on the equities, and it was probably part of the big reason that we saw pressure on live cattle, feeder cattle, and even on lean hogs. And it's that wealth perception, the whole idea that every time you get your quarterly statement or your monthly statement on 401k, it's a reminder of how rich they really are, which helps to support demand for beef, which helps support grocery sales and so on. Until you get there and you run everything through the cash register and think to yourself, my gosh, what did I just do? How did I spend that much money? So it might change your attitude for the next time that you go out there. So the goalposts are always moving when it comes to the exactly what the price projections are in the grains, what the ideas are for the equities, and what the perceptions are of how consumers view themselves on that wealth ladder. And so it has an impact on what total demand might be down the line. But if you keep that in mind, don't get more bearish as prices fall, don't get more bullish as prices rise, it helps you to kind of just moderate your expectations and keep what's important in mind. And Chris mentioned it more than once. If you've got profits to take, if the market gives you an opportunity to lock in a profit, shouldn't you be looking at doing some of that and making sure that you get things locked in? Another thing that Chris and I talked about is repricing in the grains. He mentioned it very quickly. I've asked that question several times this week. Have the ag commodities, grains in particular, have the grain markets been left behind an inflationary push? We saw it in the livestock. Are we seeing it in hogs? Gold making new all-time highs. Coffee is at highs. Crude oil over $85. Precious metals high. The commodity world in general seems to be suggesting that the grain markets have been left behind on another inflationary push. I don't know if we're going to have to make an adjustment and reprice the ag commodities at some point, or the grains in particular at some point, but who knows? We might have to do that. And if we do get into repricing, I think it's probably going to be favorable for the grain markets going forward. There's some transition in the weather, not only from El Nino to ENSO neutral to La Nina expected in the growing season that's ahead, but just in the next couple of weeks, we've got some variability in the weather in the 6 to 10 day and the 8 to 14 day from the National Weather Service. 6 to 10 day for April 18th through the 22nd. Below normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. Right in the middle of the country, a big dip of below normal temperatures expected in the Midwest. We've also got below normal precipitation expected in Wisconsin, Northwest Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, and North Dakota. Near normal precipitation is expected in the southern areas and the eastern areas. Most of Illinois, Indiana, all of Ohio, Michigan, in near normal for precipitation April 18th through the 22nd. But we jump out to the 8 to 14 day for April 20th through the 26th. We've got the above normal temperatures coming back into the western plains, the central plains, northern plains. Near normal temperatures expected in Minnesota, western Iowa, eastern Nebraska, and down through central Kansas. Below normal temperatures expected in southeast Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. We've also got below normal precipitation making its move to the eastern belt, with near normal to above normal rains in the western belt. Hey, thanks so much for listening. We've got Rob Fox from CoBank on Monday morning.